The power of nature in Japan has literally allowed geology to change geography. Streets have been wiped out completely. Neighborhoods are gone. Maps have no relevance in some parts of Japan at this point, and that makes it a particular challenge for the relief workers who are trying to reach people who may still be stranded, people who have now lost their homes. Joining this morning is Christoph Gorder. He's the Senior Vice President of Global Programs at AmeriCares. He's overseeing the relief efforts in Japan right now. And also on the line with us from Tokyo is Lasse Peterson, International Director for Shelterbox International. He's been to Sendai and Minamisen Riku, two of the worst affected areas. And Lasse, maybe you can explain to us what the particular challenges are for relief workers who are trying to get supplies to the people who've been hit by the tsunami.
Sure. Well, I mean, there are many challenges. Obviously, first, just getting to the country, getting freight booked and getting in here. But then, of course, you arrive at Tokyo, and most of the disaster-affected areas are some 200 miles, 300-400, further away from here. You've got the nuclear plants that are malfunctioning, making a lot of areas unsafe to travel. So we have to take further routes than we normally would to get up to areas like Sendai and Minami. Sanriku. When you first get there, coming in somewhere like Sendai, you find that it doesn't appear so bad because the design of buildings here and the construction standards are such that most buildings actually survive the earthquake quite well. But as you get closer to the coast, where the tsunami has struck, it's a completely different picture where everything's absolutely been devastated. Moving further up the north, we visited places like Minami Sanriku, a town of about 17,000 people, where almost every home has been completely destroyed, literally reduced to matchsticks and debris piled meters high. There are a few concrete structures that have survived, three-story buildings, 10 metres higher or more, and literally on the roofs of them, they're covered in debris. Some of them have cars washed up over them. So the challenge now for us is doing a needs assessment. We visited some of the evacuation centres and just assessing the numbers of people that we need to help, and then start moving aid from Tokyo, where it's starting to arrive, up towards
out to where you need to. The people need it. And that's also what, Christoph, you're trying to coordinate. We like to think that in first world nations, in places where we have strong infrastructures and strong government, that disaster relief is easier or perhaps smoother, that we're better prepared. Is that true?
Good morning. It is a logical assumption, but in our experience of responding to disasters for the last 30 years, both in developed countries, situations like Hurricane Katrina, and very underdeveloped countries like Haiti, I find each disaster brings its own challenges, and it's hard to say that in the developed nations they're less challenging. Certainly, the resources are different, the challenges are different. But, an event of this magnitude or something like Hurricane Katrina just completely overwhelms the local ability to handle the aftermath of the disaster. And so I think you need to think about it in relative terms.
Right.
And it's really very... very overwhelming, very difficult for the local authorities, and obviously very difficult for us as international organizations.
Well, which is why we're grateful that AmeriCares is on the case there in Japan, along with other relief agencies. Christoph Gorder is Senior Vice President of Global Programs at AmeriCares. Lasse Peterson, International Director of Shelterbox, who's working on the ground in Japan. I have a question for you. How the heck do you know where you are in some of these places that have been completely turned to matchsticks, as you described?
Obviously we've got an overall general perspective of the area, but you're right. When you arrive on the scene, roads used to be, where villages used to be, they've completely disappeared. In some sense, of course, we can't do a lot for the people that have become fatalities and washed away. So to some extent, we're interested in that in terms of the logistics and the roads and the access. But where we're looking to work is where the survivors now are. And therefore, it's the challenge of identifying what's needed and then just to get it up there where roads and access has been cut. At times we can do that working through local government authorities where they have effective emergency management plans in place. Where they don't have that, you know, we'll team up with the military, you know, because they tend to have the sort of assets that we don't have, whether it's all-terrain vehicles, helicopters, you know, whatever we need to get equipment to where it's most needed.
Well, Lasse, you know, your boxes that you deliver are recognizable at this point. People have probably seen them before, these big old heavy-duty green, bright green, like 45-gallon plastic boxes full of supplies. What are you delivering? What do the people of Japan need at this point inside their boxes?
You know, from our point of view at Shelter, obviously, the main item is emergency shelter, high-quality disaster relief tents to, you know, just get people back under some form of shelter, blankets and things like that to keep them warm, water purification where that's essential. But obviously, we're working in with the local authorities and very much liaising with them so we can provide what's needed, where it's needed. It's still a very unclear picture because you have, you know, potentially hundreds of thousands of people displaced, and we've still got the uncertainty of the nuclear environment. That makes it, you know, unclear as to where we can establish environments for people, knowing that they won't have to relocate again quickly if things deteriorate further.
And Christoph, do you find yourself having the same sort of concerns that Lasse is talking about in terms, I mean, are your relief workers in some places having to simply go on foot, pack things in packs, and look for survivors?
So, you know, I think this is the period after a disaster which is probably the most difficult. So from 5 to 10 days after a disaster, most of us at this point are on the ground. We're starting our assessments. We're in the front lines. And we're putting operations and logistics in place to deliver. And so help is on the way. Those systems are being built here over the next couple of days. But it feels like a long time has passed since this disaster. And a lot remains to be done, and so we're in the typical phase after the disaster, where it really is sort of the darkest point of the night. But help is on the way, and you know, in a couple of days we'll all be in a very different situation, and you know, a lot more aid will be getting into these areas
because of you and volunteers with the organization. And Christoph Gorder, Senior Vice President of Global Programs at AmeriCares. Lasse Petersen is International Director of ShelterBox, a disaster relief not-for-profit. I want to remind people that at our website, we actually have a listing of places where you can donate to the relief effort in Japan. Just go to thetakeaway.org and take a look at that. Thank you so much, Christoph and Lasse.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.